bears and new cubs are out roaming and foraging across Alaska. This can mean a great photo opportunity for a lucky Alaskan or a potentially dangerous encounter for an unlucky one. I'm Lori Townsend. As more of us venture outdoors for fishing, hiking, and camping, what's our responsibility in bear country? Especially since most of the state is bear country. How can you safely exit from a sudden meeting with a bear that has a bad attitude? Bears, cubs, and spring outdoor safety are the topic today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. We're taking a break from concern and worry over the state budget today, cleansing the political palate with bears. Before I introduce my guests, and I have three guests in the studio today, and before we start discussing bears, I have a confession that I have to make. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm going to tell everyone, few people know this, but I'm telling everyone now that I have never seen a bear in Alaska. Never. In 15 years. Slightly embarrassing, I know. I've seen prints of a polar bear near the ocean in Barrow that made me glad I had not seen that bear. I heard a bear making a woofing sort of a sound over a ridge while picking berries in Arctic Valley a few years ago, but didn't see the bear. I saw them a few times as a kid in the Midwest. Small black bears, that's all. Okay, there it's out there. I can discuss them now without feeling quite so much like a fake. My guests in the studio today are Elizabeth Manning. Elizabeth is an education and outreach coordinator with ADF&G, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And Sean Farley is a biologist with Fish and Game, and you specialize in bears, is that right? Is that accurate to say, Sean?
I do a lot of research on black and brown bears, yes.
All right, good morning, and good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
And also in the studio with us is Dave Battle. Dave is the area biologist for Anchorage. For folks in Anchorage, that was Jesse Coltrane's job for quite a while, and Rick's in it before that. So Dave has big shoes to fill in the area biologist department. Welcome. Thanks for being here, Dave.
Thanks for having us.
And you can join our conversation today about bears. It's spring, and we're talking about bears and being safe in Alaska, which is pretty much an entire state of bear country. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. I wanted to start a little bit with having you guys sort of just describe what your jobs are. Elizabeth, you're an outreach and an education coordinator. What is it that you spend time doing?
Well, part of my job is to assist the biologists if they have an issue that they feel like would benefit from public education. And of course, in Anchorage, one of our bigger issues is dealing with urban wildlife, which has a huge component of dealing with people as part of that. So I help the biologists out and develop materials and put on public programs to try to get the word out to people about wildlife safety in general. We do a lot of school talks with kids. I have help from Tom Griffin, and we go in and talk to about 7,000 or 8,000 Anchorage school kids every year about bear and moose safety.
How would you characterize how aware kids are of bears and being safe in bears? When you go talk to kids in schools, do they have a pretty good understanding of what they do need to be concerned about, but also what they do not, that they don't need to be just flat terrified all the time about bears? Easy for me to say. I've never seen one.
Well, I mean, interesting that you asked that straight out, and I don't mean to make it sound like we've had a big success, but I've been in this job about 10 years, and when we were first going into schools, we got a lot more oddball questions And the kids seemed a little bit frightened, but we've gone into schools quite a bit, and we're actually finding that, you know, we go in and ask them, you know, okay, what do you do in this situation? And a lot of times they know. So I think the kids are getting pretty well informed. It's not like we're reaching every kid, but we do go into some of the same schools year after year. And some of the events, you know, we see the same kids year after year, and they seem to be starting to understand a little bit more about bear safety, and I think they're probably teaching their folks, too.
That's good. Sean and Dave, talk a little about what the scope of your work is when you're working in bear country and what you spend your days doing.
Well, this is Sean, and I conduct research, so I try and come up with proposals and questions that'll provide useful information to help us manage usually the black and brown bear populations in Anchorage and on the Kenai, basically all of 14C, Prince William Sound. Projects can range anywhere from, I've got a long-term productivity study on brown bears right now on the Kenai. We asked some questions with regard to black bears in Anchorage recently with our story map. Some of that information's come out. We've done brown bear research on Jay Bear and on Anchorage, looking at how many bears are using the area opportunistically, if we can, try and come up with estimates of numbers of animals that are around and what's important for them in terms of food, what's important for them in terms of human attractants.
Mm-hmm. And Dave Battle, the new area biologist for the Anchorage area.
As area manager, I do participate in research projects sometimes with Sean, but as manager, I'm more into utilizing the findings that he comes up with the research to help manage and set population goals and that sort of thing. I also do a lot of responding to wildlife conflicts around town, managing wildlife conflicts with people who actually have seen bears in Alaska. And
really?
Yeah. And might I compliment you on that accomplishment? It's must have taken a lot of work to not see a bear in Alaska for 15 years.
I must be radiating some sort of fear or something.
If you could teach that, that would be great. Yeah.
What have your observations, Dave, been about conflicts between humans and bears in the Anchorage area? How has that changed in the time that you've been doing this work?
Well, in the last certainly 10 or 12 years, you seem to see a lot more people in the woods. If we're talking about outside the actual settled areas, whenever you go to trailheads, I just see a lot more people that are actually out in the woods. So there are more... they're more likely to come into contact with bears just simply because there are more people out there. So we get more calls than we used to. With in town, this is not new information probably, but almost all wildlife conflicts are due to human provided attractants. Trash is the big one, but also bird seed, and we're having more issues with chickens and that sort of thing. So it's just a continuing. Continuing evolution, I guess, of how to deal with those things and how to get people to keep their attractants secured, how to, you know, protect chicken coops with electric fences, you know, all that sort of thing. So,
mm-hmm. How does the spring activity cycle of bears vary? Blacks and browns, do they usually start becoming active at the same time, or do they have kind of different hibernation and activity cycles?
The Sean? Bears are pretty similar, and, you know, they're individuals more than anything else. And, for instance, I was flying telemetry yesterday, and I still have brown bears in the Kenai that are denned. As a general rule, the big males, adult males for both species, will come out of the den first, and they can do that in south central Alaska as early as mid to late March, but usually in April. Usually it's going to be in April. And then lone bears and females that have older cubs will come out over time, usually by the end of April into the first part of May. And then those that have young cubs tend to stay later. Mm. There are always exceptions to the rule. There are always, you know, we'll see a young mom with a bunch of young koi, cubs of the year, running around early in the year. But more often than not, the more savvy moms will keep their young long as they can in the den.
Okay. Sean, you and I have talked before about the bear story map. Give us a kind of a rundown, maybe you and Elizabeth can both talk about this, and Dave, of course. How did that project get started, the bear mapping project in Anchorage?
Well, it started with a camera collar project that I've been pushing for quite some time in Anchorage and elsewhere. And other department staff have been hanging bear collars on brown bears. I got it in Unit 13, trying to determine the rate at which they're taking different prey items. And so it made sense to try and transport that into Anchorage, figure out how important natural foods versus human attractants were to bears. By having video taken by the bears, if you will, we learn a lot more about their daily patterns and their daily nutritional intake than we would just by having locations or calls coming in to people like Dave about problem bears, because not everybody that sees a bear is going to call in, and so you don't collect that data point. And then when we got all of this information in terms of forms of video, Elizabeth was she can talk about how useful it's been with her education outreach stuff. Another biologist who's not here, Tony Carnahan, spearheaded taking that and put it into the actual story map that people can see online. So it's really melded together a lot of the management and educational stuff that we've done with the research.
And I want to let people know, Elizabeth, before you start talking about this project, that you can go to our website right now, alaskapublic.org, and that map is there, and some of those videos are there. You can click on them and watch. They're short, but you can watch some short videos of urban bears. Elizabeth?
In terms of the educational aspect of that project, I was just really grateful that Sean and Tony and Dave included education as part of it, because I think it was Tony who sort of said, you know, if a picture's worth 1,000 words, then a video's worth even more. And it's true. I mean, when we were putting some of these videos together and I was showing them to different people, I had one guy helping me with some technical stuff at the Apple store one day, and he said, oh my gosh, my girlfriend said that, you know, bears would climb up trees and knock down bird feeders, but I didn't really believe her. And then he saw the video of a bear way high up in a tree, you know, trying to get at the bird feeder, and he, you know, realized at that point that he really needed to take down his bird feeder in the spring and not put it back up until bears go back into their dens. So it's been super helpful from an education standpoint for people to be able to look at the story map and see what bears are actually doing. And we've also been working with it a little bit with teachers and students, teaching them mapping through ArcGIS online and using the story map in classrooms too.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about bears. It's springtime. Bears are moving around, and we're talking about bear safety. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, 550-8422. We have a caller on the line from Delta Junction. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, and thank you. Yes, I would really like to see some real investigation and some real realistic dialogue about the role that bear baiters play in the human-bear, you know, contact conflict area. Bears, I don't know if the general public knows that baiting, I believe, has to be a 1.25 mile or something like that from it, a trail or road. And, of course, those bears don't, you know, circle around Fairbanks at the stations. They travel, you know, straight through. And one summer I called Fish and Game because I'm very concerned about bear baiting stations in my neighborhood, and they told me that Fairbanks is basically ringed with bear baiting stations, and you're not allowed as the public to know where those stations are. So it's kind of, it seems crazy that it presents this public hazard, And yet we're not, you know, allowed to know. And I just wondered if your guests could talk about any sort of, you know, it's sort of a sacred cow with fishing game. You know, you can't attack hunters or baiters or whatever, but I wish there could be some really realistic investigation and dialogue about the bear baiting stations.
All right. Well, thank you for your question, Shelley. Who wants to tackle that? First, I think it would be good to explain what is meant by bear baiting stations.
This is Sean. Yeah. In Alaska and different parts of the state, it's legal to take out attractants that are food items to bears and set them up at a site where then you, the hunter, can come and perch in a stand usually to harvest the bear later when it comes in. And there are different rules in different places as to what you can and can't use as bait, but generally people will use everything from donuts to dog food to burnt honey to anise, anything that's sort of a novel, unique scent to attract the bears. And it's a good question, and it's one that I get quite often in research, is how, if at all, are we training bears to be attracted to human-related foods? And part of it is going to be context, is that the bear bait sites aren't at houses, they're not in garages, they're not usually in garbage cans, although they might be in 55-gallon drums. They're out in the woods, and so the bears don't associate, I would assume, a house with the food stuff. They definitely, I'm sure, are picking up human scent, and they know that the food is associated with human scent. But I can say that from my perspective, I haven't been seeing a lot of uptick, if you will, of bear problems related to bear baiting. But at the same time, I think it's a fair question to ask that, you know, is there an association the bears are making of some sort? I don't think that we can say we've seen a problem yet from it relative to bears causing problems.
And what about the rules about proximity? How close can bear baiting areas be to existing trails and places where people are camping or going through?
Yeah, I probably get the exact number. It's not a mile and a quarter, but it is, I believe, half a mile. Dave?
Yeah, I think it's half a mile. And I don't remember off the top of my head. We don't have bear baiting in around Anchorage in Game Management Unit 14C, but it's a quarter mile from some things and half a mile from other things. You know, what the housing and dwelling units as opposed to developed campgrounds and that sort of thing. I think it's at least half a mile, but I'd have to look it up to be sure.
Do bears, certainly urban bears, get more accustomed to humans and kind of understand a little bit about what that may mean if they have interactions with them? But a bear that's less accustomed to interactions with humans, what's your knowledge or your research, what does it show about how bears perceive humans in the wild? Do they see them as another source of protein, or do they have some way of kind of deciphering that this is a potential problem? What's known about that?
Well, I can't crawl into a bear's head and say this is what they're thinking. We don't have very many predatory attacks where you would say the bear had considered this to be a person to be a meal and went for it. In truth, that's actually a pretty rare event. It does occur, however. I mean, in most cases, the bear's view of people is just some other animal on the landscape, would be my guess, and that the human doesn't pose a threat to the bear, then the bear is just as likely to continue on doing what it's doing.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call. Do you have a question about bear safety, or do you have a bear story you'd like to tell? And I want to set up a bit of a bear story right now, and we're going to hear a clip of audio. This is our producer and senior editor here, Annie Feit, and her husband Dave Bass, her husband. They spend a lot of time out in the backcountry. They do a lot of hiking and skiing, and they camp out in wild areas and have seen a lot of bears, unlike me. And this is a particular encounter that they had. We'll hear this, and then I'll give you a little bit more of the story after we come out of this audio.
Usually when I say there's a bear, it means there's a bear eating berries, or there's a bear a quarter mile away. But unfortunately, in this case, it meant there is a brown bear running as fast as it can downhill towards us.
And what did I do?
You looked up, saw the bear running at us, and started running away.
So there is Annie admitting, or Dave relaying the fact that she did what you're not supposed to do. If I'm understanding this correctly, you should not see the bear and run away. That encounter ended poorly for the bear, but well for Dave and Annie. The bear was running down a hill, and it somehow tripped and rolled end over end, crashed into rocks, into the creek that was where Annie and Dave had stopped to fill up their canteens, and it must have broke its back, and so it was no longer able to come after them, and instead was there. And Annie said that it, you know, changed her emotions from being very terrified to feeling bad that this bear was going to now just lay out there and die, because they were a couple of days back into the backcountry. When someone sees a bear, and of course I can't relate to that experience because I haven't seen one here in Alaska, but I've heard conflicting reports about what you should do with brown and black bears. What is the best information about how people should react if they see a black bear or a brown bear? What should they do so that you don't have to be in this moment of fear thinking, oh, wait a minute, now is it the brown bear that I make myself big with and the black bear I'm quiet, or vice versa? What's the best information?
I can take that one. What we've kind of come to telling people, and I'm, first of all, let me say I'm not a bear expert, but I've talked to a lot of bear experts and I've read a lot of things, and we do a lot of public programs. And what bear experts have sort of moved to is not necessarily deciding whether it's a black or brown bear, but trying to understand how the bear is behaving. And so you need to kind of understand whether it's a defensive situation or a non-defensive situation. In both cases, fortunately, you know, if you see a bear, you do the same thing regardless to begin with. You try to stay calm, and I understand that is not always, it's easier said than done. So we always tell people the more that you can think about it, rehearse, you know, what you might do, you know, be out there walking and say, you know, what would we do right now if we saw a bear, and think about it as much as you can. So first of all, try to stay calm. If the bear doesn't notice you, you're far away. You're just supposed to quietly leave the area and just keep your eyes on the bear and just, you know, don't lose your head and try to go up closer and get a photo. If the bear does notice you, you're supposed to face the bear. You know, bear experts say, you know, wave your arms, but, you know, it doesn't really matter. A lot of that idea behind that is just trying to make yourself look bigger. You know, get a group together if you've got people together, and then talk to the bear. And that's just giving the bear another clue that you're a human, so that it can understand the situation. And if you can do it in a calm voice, that's best, to try to, you know, reassure the bear. Try to appear larger and stand next to other people. If the bear does continue to approach you, you're supposed to stand your ground and try not to run. And then the difference really comes if it's a defensive situation where you've surprised the bear surprised you. In those situations, if the bear actually knocks you down and makes contact with you, then you're supposed to play dead. And the old adage is brown bear play dead, and that's because typically those defensive situations are with brown bears. And the biologist can correct me or add anything here. And those non-defensive situations, you know, again, Sean sort of mentioned those are far rarer. You know, those are can be predatory situations, or they can be just a curious bear or a, you know, food conditioned bear. And those are the situations where you want to be more aggressive with the bear. And of course, you know, before it comes to the point of making contact with you, if you have bear spray, get that out, ready to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Sean, Dave, do you have anything to add to that?
To me, the biggest thing is to really, it's hard, but you have to remain calm.
Mm-hmm.
And try and figure out what the bear is going to do. We run into bears a lot in my line of work where they're I might have two-year-olds because I have anesthetized mom and I'm trying to put a collar on her, and her two-year-olds are repeatedly charging us. And because they're two-year-olds, they don't mean it. And so, you know, we often make an irreverent joke about it'd be really embarrassing to either be mauled by a two-year-old or have to shoot one to keep from getting mauled, because they're really just problem kids that you can run at and scare off. But if we have an estrus female, the big adult boars will come in on us, and you can't scare them off at all. Mm. And in fact, we have to then get up and move and take the bear with us if we can and stuff. So it's all very context sensitive, very much so. And mm-hmm. you just have to remain as calm as you can.
I was reading a story about an encounter where the recommendation was to talk to the bear, as you were suggesting, in a calm voice, but also to be backing away slowly. Is that recommended if the bear is moving toward you, or do you just sort of have to read the situation, and if the bear's moving slowly toward you, maybe slowly backing away works? If the bear's running toward you, maybe that's when you have to stand your ground? Or is it just you have to kind of read each situation as it comes along?
I wish there was a nice magical cure-all that we could say, do A, B, C, and you're fine. And that isn't the case. A lot of bears that are young and inquisitive that aren't frightened are going to follow you. They want to check you out. And if you're backing up, they'll quite happy to kind of tag along with you. And that's both for black and browns. And I hear that a lot from people that are followed by bears at times. And it may not be a predatory following. It may be just real curious. To be anthropomorphic, young bears are lonely. And they're looking around for buddies at times. And they're just curious about what's going on in the world. They're been kicked off by their mom, perhaps, and looking for what the heck is out there. But, you know, the bottom line is don't run. That I can say would be probably one rule that would be true, is that don't run.
And when we do talk to kids, we, you know, try to boil it down to something simple. And, you know, Sean's right. Every encounter is different. The best thing is if you can stay calm and read the bear's behavior and then, you know, act accordingly. But for kids, we do say, you know, if the bear is not approaching you, then you want to back away slowly. Mm-hmm. And if the bear, you know, continues to walk towards you, you do want to stand your ground and make some more noise. As a simple rule.
And the non-running thing, I think, is just good general advice for any encounter that you have with a bear or a dog or any kind of an animal that's prone to the chase. You don't want to run and trigger that instinct in them to come after you. So backing away slowly would be the best idea for anything in that setting. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll go to the phones, and we'll hear more about bear safety as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Graduate with work-ready experience in the career field of your choice. Apply now for fall 2015. Find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message is sponsored by APU.
All of a sudden, we see the bushes in front of us shaking, and it didn't seem good. We felt like maybe we had been cut off by the same sow, and so we turned around and started heading back towards the trailhead, and in less than 10 steps, she just darted around the corner in front of us at full speed, you know, like a missile, and in moments was on us, and Maya, my dog, you know, was at first, and she sort of jumps off the trail, and then John, and so then me, and so I jump off the trail. But unfortunately, you know, I was the closest thing to the shaking bushes behind us, which only in hindsight did we realize must have been her cubs.
That bit of audio is from Dan Bigley. Dan was attacked in 2003 on the Russian River and wrote a bear about his encounter called Beyond the Bear. He was a guest on Alaska Talk, or not Talk of Alaska, on Alaska News Nightly one evening. We had him come on and talk about his encounter. Dan and a friend were fishing on the Russian River. They were returning to their car at the parking lot. They encountered an angry brown bear who sort of huffed at them, hair raised. Dan said they slowly backed away, decided they would take a longer route back to the car. But what ended up happening was they heard noise in the brush. They thought it was the bear that had come back, and it was actually the cubs. They tried to do the right thing by taking another path away. Are there other bits of advice that you would give about a situation like that? Here it is. They're at the Russian River. There's salmon everywhere. Of course there's going to be bears. What can people do to make sure that they can go and fish safely and avoid something that can end up in a really negative situation such as Mr. Bigley experienced?
Well, you know, the fate is fate, and there are going to be some times where you can't, even in hindsight, say, do this or should have done that. And I don't really want to armchair quarterback anything, mm-hmm. particularly this particular incident. The rules that Elizabeth had mentioned, the general guidelines about making noise and how you behave in general around bear country, in bear country, and especially on salmon streams, they're the best guidelines that we have. And regrettably and unfortunately, there'll be cases like Mr. Bigley's that are going to happen.
And I guess I would just add to that. I mean, we've talked a lot about what do you do if you actually encounter a bear. And, you know, in reality, like, look at your own situation. You lived here 15 years and you haven't seen one. So maybe you're really talkative out there, Lori.
I really am.
Are you?
Because I do have concerns about having a negative encounter. So I talk all the time. I yell. I talk when I'm out picking berries. If I'm fishing, especially if it's in a brushy area, yeah. As I'm moving through the brush, I just keep talking. Hey, bear. I'm coming through, bear. I won't take all the berries. I'll leave some for you.
So one way to prevent bear encounters would be to hang out with you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I'm your bear safety.
Yeah. I mean, so I think it's a really well-taken point, though. I mean, the main thing that we try to stress to people is prevention in the first place. And one of the best things you can do when you're out there is make a lot of noise when you're out in bear country, you know, just talking, clapping loudly, saying, hey, bear, ho, bear.
Yep. I do that.
Telling
I whistle,
jokes, whistling.
Sing, whatever.
Yep.
Just making a lot of racket.
Yeah. So, and that and, you know, being in a group, and those are sort of the two biggest preventative things. And being aware, you know, mm-hmm. unplugging, taking your headphones off, looking out for bear signs on the trail.
Yes. I think that it's important to act sort of like another animal when you're out there. And you know, if you watch deer or animals that are out grazing, they look up every few minutes and look all around them and make sure they know who's in their vicinity. We're going to go now to Sitka and talk to Rich. Good morning, Rich.
Hi, Lori. First of all, I'd like to ask if I could hire you to take out my garbage every week since you haven't encountered bears.
Sure, I'll be right there.
Okay. Yeah, here's the thing. It's Christmas. My kids are home. They haven't been back for a while. And we're sitting around Christmas, and all of a sudden the outside light comes on. It's a photo sensor light. And then the car alarm goes off. And my oldest son, who's in his 40s, this is the house he's raised, and says, I'll go check on the car. And he'll, no, because I know it's the bear. Now, he says, but it's Christmas. Bears aren't around this time of year. I said, you want to bet? Since about 2011, the bears haven't had the decency to hibernate. What's happening? and one other question, how can I safely take my garbage out? Because literally, this is a problem. I'll take the garbage out at 7, like the law says. If the truck is like 20 minutes late, the bear might get the garbage. I'm afraid I'm going to come out with an armload of smelly garbage, and there he is.
Mm.
So two questions. Why don't they hibernate, and how can I safely take out my garbage?
Valid questions. Thank you, Rich. Sean, you want to tackle this one?
Well, if you're a female bear and you're going to have cubs give birth, you hibernate because the cubs can't support themselves. They're born after being in utero just for a couple of months, and so it takes them a long time to develop before they can follow. So pregnant females will go into the den. Beyond that, it's a matter of food resource availability, and a good example would be black bears, and Dave can probably attest to this from his experience down south, is if there's food available and you don't have a reproductive requirement to go into the den, there isn't necessarily a reason to do so. Denning is a way of avoiding a time period when there isn't a lot of food around. And if you've got food that's available to you and you don't have to reproduce, then denning isn't necessarily needed. And so I won't say that all bears are not denning anymore up here since 2011, but you're going to run into a few that occasionally they don't need to do it. And Kodiak's a good example in terms of how infrequently some bears or how shortly some bears will have for denning periods. It's going to be pretty short depending on what the different nutritional needs are for those particular animals. And as far as the garbage issue, the best thing I'd say is the old-time tested garbage bear-resistant containers be the best thing to start with.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that some kind of a repellent that people can spray near their garbage, or is there nothing that's been developed like that that would keep bears away?
Years ago, I did a little study looking at trying to attract bears, and what I realized very quickly is that they investigate every novel scent. If it's new, if it smells new to them in particular, they will come check you out. They'll check it out. And so people that have prophylactically sprayed bear spray on, like, floats of the plane or around their tent, all they're doing is putting something down that the bear wants to investigate.
Some seasoning. Dave?
Yeah. I guess one of my questions, if this person was calling me and this was happening in Anchorage, I would wonder what else is around there. If the caller is only putting his garbage out the day of pickup and that's when the bear is coming around, the bear's not hanging around all week just for that. You know, there's probably something else in that neighborhood. And a lot of the times whenever we've had calls like this, if we start investigating around the neighborhood, we realize the guy's next door neighbor has a trash pile out behind his house. And it might be hitting his garbage incidentally, but really what it's hanging around for is some other attractant. So working in your community, talking to your neighbors, and kind of keeping an eye on what else is around your house. You might be being very responsible with your trash, but somebody else in the neighborhood might not be.
Mm-hmm. Good point. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call around the state if you'd like to join our conversation on Talk of Alaska about bears and bear safety today, or locally in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, 550-8422. And now we're going to hear from Jack in Anchorage. Good morning.
Thank you. I'm not sure how my cell phone battery will do, so could you guys address the bear gall underground market? I know that's pretty high on the horizon of some people who take bears. And also, just an observation in circles I'm in, people no longer report data to Fish and Game, especially about predatory bears that are taken out. And I'm just wondering, do you guys recognize that maybe the numbers you're giving might not be so accurate anymore, especially since people have been fined for taking out bears, and plus all the requirements you have to do if you do take one on a life and limb situation. And also people have noted that when they complain about bears, the Game of Boar just opens up vast areas for hunting that were previously closed, and it kind of changes the wilderness nature of certain areas near Anchorage. I'll just listen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that kind of a series of broad questions there. I'll kind of hit a couple of them, I guess, if I give a shot there. The first one, if I understand it correctly, was about the gallbladders. And it's true in certain cultures, bear gallbladders are highly coveted. There have been cases, it's long past now, where we've had different poaching rings that specialized in that. I'm not in enforcement. I can't speak to what's going on right now. I know in the past that our troopers have done an excellent job at breaking up a lot of those rings. And while it's probably still ongoing, at the same time, that's not something that is really common that I've picked up in the Anchorage office or on the Kenai. As far as the bit about the bear Board of Game doing different things with regard to harvesting bears and opening up different areas and then people not reporting information, we can't control what the people want to report. I think sometimes a few cases might get blown out of proportion by different communities, members of the community, as to why not to report or why to do certain things in terms of when you do shoot an animal. The bottom line is that you're not fined if you shoot an animal for a defense of life or property. You're not charged with anything. You don't get to keep the skull or the hide or the meat, but you're not fined for that. It's a very, very rare case. In fact, I can only think of two instances right now where somebody who did file a defense of life or property kill actually was charged. So, but I don't know, Dave may have some insights on some.
Yeah, that's like Sean said, if a defense of life and property, vast majority of bears killed in defense of life and property, you fill out a form and you turn the head and the hide into the state and you don't have any problems. I mean, it is a little bit of work because you have to skin the bear yourself and all that sort of thing and fill out a form. But if you're actually actually killing it in defense of your life, then you know you're not too worried about that. You know, mm-hmm. What invalidates defense of life and property kill is if you had some. Usually, it's if you were pursuing the bear and harassing it or something like that. You know, and you kind of put yourself into that situation, which is very rare. The other one is if you left an attractant like trash out, like it came into your house and it's in your garbage can and you shoot it. You know, that's not a valid defense of life and property kill. But again, those are pretty rare. I have rarely ever seen that situation.
We're talking, we're talking about bears and bear safety today on Talk of Alaska. There's a couple of email comments here I want to get to, and this particular email was directed towards Sean, but Dave, this might be a better question for you or either one of you, actually. It's a question about where there is a potential brown bear den a mile or so east of where North Campbell Creek crosses the Muldoon Swamp is the Tank Trail. And he says, is there a brown bear den between the Tank Trail and the near front hills of Chugach State Park that you're aware of? Do brown bears den in lower elevations? He provided a map, which of course doesn't work real well for radio, but I'll forward it to you guys so you can maybe get back to him. But any knowledge of a brown bear den in that area?
There are a lot of bear dens around Anchorage. How can I put it? When we did a brown bear collaring study on Anchorage and Jaybear a few years ago, I could sit in my office on Raspberry and see and look and see and watch one bear come out of her den up on the hillside below Wolverine Peak. And I've had brown bears den at 5 feet above sea level and at 6,000 feet. And the bears that around Anchorage den pretty much anywhere they want to. So I would not be surprised at all if there's a hole there that was used recently by a brown or a black bear.
Okay. Here's someone, Tom in Fairbanks, sent in a note saying, when he lived in Sitka and Ketchikan in the 1980s, bears were never seen in town. We didn't have any problem with them getting into garbage. We'd see them out on the trails. He said, now both towns have lots of bear problems. What's changed? Are there more bears, expanded suburbs, more garbage? Now, I realize that you guys aren't in Southeast, but ideas about what may have changed in these areas or just generally?
Well, when I first came up here a couple million years ago, there were far fewer people on the Kenai, and now we have an awful lot of people, and that means there are more cases for interactions with bears, and that same thing is true for Southeast. The population of the state has increased, and people are living in parts of the outlying areas they didn't used to live in, and so there are more chances to encounter a bear. The other side is bear populations are like any other animal population. They go up and they go down, and they could be easily climbing for that area.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to go back to the phones for a moment here, and this is Brenda in Fairbanks. Good morning, Brenda.
Good morning. I was, our family's planning a lot of summer events out in the woods and been reading up on bear and getting informed on how to be out in the woods correctly. And one thing I noticed is that a lot of people will suggest to yell, "Hey, bear," while they're walking. And I think maybe we should save any form of the word bear for when there is actually a bear in close range, so that people might realize immediately the danger rather than kind of being neutralized to the word. and put their heads up and see that it's time to react because there's a bear close by.
That's a really interesting point. And, you know, and I'm glad that you raised that because I wanted our guests today, Elizabeth, Sean, and Dave, to kind of give us some context about what the concern level should really be. We don't want people to fixate on just being terrified that bears are lurking around waiting to attack them at any moment. Of all of the numerous encounters that happen throughout the summer, attacks really are quite rare, are they not?
Yeah, very rare. And when you read accounts of bear attacks and you listen to these audios or videos, you start getting the idea that there's a bear lurking behind every tree just waiting to attack you. You know, and that's not the case at all. It's, you know, there might be plenty of bears, but the vast majority of the time you never even saw them. They smelled you coming or heard you or something, and they left. You might have had many fairly close encounters, and you never realized it because bears typically are not just going to bears typically are not going to attack people. I mean, it is always a risk, but the vast majority of encounters, the bear goes the other way.
And Sean, you and I talked about that the last time that you came in for an interview about the bear mapping project in Anchorage. And if folks go to the website, alaskapublic.org, and look at some of those videos, you can see shots from these bear collars where they're observing people going by, and the people that are being observed by the bears aren't aware of it. So it's kind of hard to understand that an animal that large could be that quiet, but apparently they are, Sean. So oftentimes there's bears right along the trails, and we're clearly not seeing them, and they're just moving off. They don't want to interact with us.
We're a visual species completely, and the bears are visual, and they hear, and they smell, and they do move away from us. You talk about a large animal that just can disappear quickly. I'd offer to you the moose do a really good job. How many times have you looked in your front yard or down the street, and all of a sudden there's a 1,100-pound animal walking around? And then you'd look back a second later and it's gone.
Yeah.
Bears are the same thing, only they can actually climb trees to get away too.
Absolutely. We're going to take another short break and we'll continue talking about bears and bear safety through the summer as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
We're talking about bears and bear safety today on Talk of Alaska. Here is an email message from someone asking about effective fencing options for large rural residential lots in the Anchorage Bowl. This is someone who says, my interest is to keep my large dogs and family safe on a 5-acre lot on Rabbit Creek Road. She says, obviously, we'll minimize attractants, but what else can we do? What are effective fencing options? Are there some that work well? Dave? Ideas about fencing?
Sure. And what did she say she was trying to keep?
She wants to be able to have, they've got 5 acres, mm-hmm. and she's wondering if there are effective fence options that can be used to keep bears away from their dogs and their family so that they can roam around.
Well, fences certainly are, you know, might be helpful. But the main thing, though, is to not give a bear a reason to want to get inside the fence.
And she did say they would work to minimize attractants.
And that's great. You know, make sure, you know, not feeding the dogs outside, you know, and that sort of thing, or at least making sure they clean up, you know, after the dogs eat. We have had stellar success with electric fences for all kinds of things. Now, I don't know if she's talking about fencing in the entire 5-acre, place, but we really push electric fences for bears a lot. That particularly for things like livestock, chicken feed and horses and stuff like that. And we have specifications on our website as to how an electric fence should be set up for bears. But if someone was wanting to keep bears out specifically, then, you know, I would be looking at electric fences. If it's just a general fence, I mean, a bear can get over a fence. I mean, if it doesn't have a top, a bear can climb it or dig under it if it wants to. The main thing is just make sure that there's nothing in there he really feels need to get in there for. But if it's something that you absolutely just want to keep bears out for, and particularly if you have an attractant in there, we'd be looking at electric fences.
Mm-hmm. The mapping project that we were talking about earlier that's specific to Anchorage, one of the things that the map highlights is that in terms of human food sources, bears just aren't getting into garbage in Anchorage. What else are they after? What are some of the other things that people should be aware of and try to minimize to keep those interactions to a minimum?
They were eating chickens. They certainly went for domestic food like that, or domestic livestock. They went for the food that's being given to the chickens. They certainly, birdseed is a big winner with them. Mm-hmm. People will take down their bird feeders and then forget the 50-pound bag of sunflower seeds laying under the deck. The grease pits underneath barbecues are very interesting to the bears. Dave, anything you want to add?
Talking about bird seed, some people think they can hang their bird feeders up high, but birds are messy and they kick all that stuff down into your yard, and that draws the bears in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we did see videos of bears pawing through the grass and licking through the grass, mm-hmm. picking up spilled bird seed.
We even picked up a video of one of the bears would high grade the middens, which are the squirrel nest, or the squirrels would deposit seeds in the ground for their use later, and what this one squirrel was doing was taking the peanuts people were putting out and storing them in the ground, and the bear would dig those up and eat those.
Mm-hmm. I have a squirrel that does that in my yard. I find peanuts everywhere. It's incredible. So I think that's an interesting point about the grease traps, too, is that that's something that folks might not be thinking about, is their barbecue grill and all the delicious food they've cooked on there is maybe attracting bears, so keeping those clean is an important point this time of year, especially when people are using them more often. Did you want to add something?
Oh, and also just closing garage doors well.
Yes.
We definitely got some videos of bears walking straight into garages and having a good time looking for things.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to go to Ken in Valdez now. Good morning.
Hey, how are y'all?
We're great. What's you've got a personal experience to tell us about?
Yeah, I was in Fairbanks, staying out about 10 miles or so from town, and in a little cabin area that was off Sheep Creek. And we used to have bears kind of crawl around there once in a while. And one night, when the midnight sun was at its sweetest in June, we encountered a bear that came and started eating on some garbage. And he was rather close, and we were in a cabin that had a window that was right by the right by the line of ground, so it could have just rushed right through. And it was a large-headed brown bear that was not small. It had tiny little ears, great big head. And I was just wondering what to do, and I got this inspirational thought from what I say is above for the moment that, hey, just act like Yogi Bear. And so I said, hey, Yogi, where's Boo-Boo? And the bear crouched down, looked at me, and then just kind of cowardly took off. And so he was exploring different territories and looking for, you know, junk that they like to play in. And he knew he was in an area that wasn't his. At least that's my perception of it. And I got an inspirational thought to just act like Yogi Bear and kind of not fear him too much. And he just took off. So you never know what bears are going to do, but if you kind of show them that you're in a playful mood, they'll probably leave you alone.
Well, I would say that you were probably just incredibly lucky. I don't think it had anything to
luck.
Do.
I'm sorry, I can't believe in luck, but I believe in power from above, where we have power over animals, and if we don't fear, everybody has their interpretation of things, but I believe that there is power from above for each situation. And if you have favor from above, then you can overcome all obstacles. Maybe you don't believe that.
Well, I don't want to debate that right now, but anybody want to comment on just making noise, I think, is the main message there, is making some noise.
I don't want to argue with divine inspiration, but but yeah, certainly, you know, making some noise might help move the bear off. So I'm glad that worked out well.
I'm glad that it worked out well, too, instead of the bear coming through the window. Are there, in the final couple minutes that we have here, are there some, just a few good takeaways that you would give to folks about the summer season is here, people are going to be out and enjoying the beautiful weather. What are just some good tips about when you're out, what do you need to do to just help keep yourself safe so that you have a great encounter and in the wilderness and not one that's dangerous? Dave?
We only have a couple of minutes, you know, but certainly all the things we've been going over, you know, make noise and be aware, watch for bear signs, watch for, you know, tracks and scat and that sort of thing. We're coming up on, this is not exactly about bears, but we're coming up on moose calving season. Calves are starting to be born. Bears are going to be hanging around. You know, everything with teeth is hunting those little calves right now, and that's going to make the moose cows much more contentious. And right now, when their calves are this small, their instinct is to stand their ground. So even if they hear you coming. So that's one of those things that you just have to watch out for them. And particularly, I mean, we're coming up on moose calving season, also known as moose stomping on bikers season. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have mountain bikers that are using the single track trails right now, particularly out around Kincaid, and they're moving at high speeds and they can't see very far ahead of them. And they come around a corner and there's a moose cow with a calf there. Even if she hears them coming, she's not going to move out of their way. She's going to get ready to stomp on them. So just be aware of your surroundings. Carry bear spray. We really push bear spray a lot, and that's a deterrent that you can spray in their eyes and lungs, and you don't have to be all that accurate. You know, so I always say I don't recommend it instead of firearms. You know, if someone is very comfortable with firearms and that's their chosen method of defense, that's great. But just carry a big enough gun and be able to put enough bullets in the kill zone in a stressful situation. So we really push bear spray a lot because that's something that anybody can carry, and then you don't have to be all that accurate with it.
All right. Thanks so much to my guests, Elizabeth Manning, Sean Farley, and Dave Battle. We've been talking about bears and staying safe in Alaska, which, of course, is bear country. Thanks to Dave Waldron, our engineer, and Josh Edge on phones. Next week, we'll be back to talking about the budget. And the governor will be with us. We'll also have some state lawmakers on to talk about where things are at with state finances. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. Alaska Pacific University is a private liberal arts and sciences university that emphasizes student engagement with the social, cultural, and environmental issues in Alaska and the world. This message sponsored by APU. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.